Good day, everybody out there. How's it going? My name's John Shomo, and this is Then and Now, the podcast, episode number 11. We will start, as we usually do, with a preview, if you will, of birthdays and events that happened on the next few days in our history. We'll have a couple of sidebars here on the first date, though. We'll start with May 8th, Wednesday. May 8th was VE Day. During World War II, VE Day meaning victory in Europe. That is the day on which the Allies celebrated the German surrender in Europe to end the war there. The war continued in the Pacific with Japan until August and the dropping of the two atomic bombs. But this was VE Day, a very celebratory occurrence in 1945. Coca-Cola, something near and dear to my heart, was invented by pharmacist John Pemberton in Atlanta on this date in 1886. There was a smidge of cocaine in the original formula of Coca-Cola, by the way. Harry Truman, 33rd President of the United States, one of my favorites. Harry Truman, born in Missouri on May 8th, 1884. Never wanted to be president. Reluctantly accepted the vice presidential nomination in 1944. And with Roosevelt's death 88 days into his fourth term, Harry Truman became president. He didn't look back, really. He told it like it was. He was a straight talker. Won re-election in 1948, very improbably, over Thomas Dewey, and finished his term in 1952, early 1953. Ronnie Lott, the Hall of Famer, the defensive back from Southern California, most notably with the San Francisco 49ers. Ronnie Lott will be 65 on May 8th. And Bill Cowher, the former coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, led them to a Super Bowl title, now works for CBS. Bill Cowher will be 67, on May 8th. Two things here I want to elaborate on a little bit on May 8th. One is the release of Let It Be, the final Beatles film, a project which showed them making an album, basically, or purported to, was released on May 8th, 1970. Unfortunately, it was released after the band had broken up. The album came out. It's not the greatest Beatles album, but it's got some really good stuff on it. And Let It Be is being remade, remixed for audiences. It will begin streaming on May 8th on Disney Plus. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they've done with it, how they've cleaned it up and made the sound really good. For Beatles fans, that's a must-do. And again, Disney Plus, starting May 8th, the first time Let It Be has been released to the public in 50 years, basically. It hasn't really been shown anywhere since the mid-1970s. So looking forward to seeing how that goes. Also, anniversary-wise, on May 8th, 1963, the first ever James Bond movie was released to theaters. It was called Dr. No, starring the great Sean Connery. The reason I want to elaborate on that a little bit is on our recent visit to Chicago, Tammy and I went to the Museum of Science and Industry, and they had a James Bond exhibit where they had several of the automobiles and other vehicles that were used in some of the Bond films over the years. A couple of Aston Martins, really cool. Took my picture with a couple of those. It was a fantastic exhibit in a great museum. Next time you go to Chicago, if you have time, get to the Museum of Science and Industry. It's in Hyde Park near the University of Chicago on the south side there, just off of Lakeshore Boulevard. And it's worth your time. It's a really fabulous building, a huge building. And some of the exhibits they have in there are just tremendous. So that's a little plug for MSI for you folks that are into or about to be into Chicago this summer. All right, moving on to May 9th. On May 9th, 1913, the 17th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified. That allows us, we the people, to directly elect our U.S. senators. Prior to that, the state legislatures named the senators from each state, the two senators from each state. We will do that here in Ohio in November. We will have a election for one of our two Senate seats. Looking forward to that. The FDA, Food and Drug Administration, approved the birth control pill on May 9th, 1960. You may think, well, why is that in there? That is a massive event in terms of society and change in society. Think about it. Birthdays: John Brown, the rabble rouser, born on May 9th, 1800, lived in the Akron area for a while, attended church in Hudson, led a raid on Kansas with his sons, was planning to raided Harper's Ferry, then Virginia, to get weapons for a slave revolt. He was caught, captured by the U.S. Army, tried, and executed in 1859. Billy Joel will turn 75 on May 9th. And the late, great Tony Gwynn, one of the greatest hitters in the history of baseball, born on May 9th, 1960, died way too soon. On May 10th, Winston Churchill became Prime Minister of Great Britain on May 10th, 1940. And boy, were they fortunate that that happened. Ara Parseghian was born on May 10th, 1923. Ara Parseghian grew up in Akron, went to the old Akron South High School, became eventually head coach at Northwestern, and then he was plucked away from them by the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the early to mid-1960s, won a couple of national championships with Notre Dame, is a legendary college football coach, passed away here just a few years ago. Pat Summerall, the former New York Giants football star turned announcer, born on May 10th, 1930. I've already referenced him a couple of times in previous podcasts. Pat Summerall was terrific with John Madden on NFL games. He also did golf for CBS. Chris Berman, speaking of sportscasters, will be 69 years old on May 10th. Used to make up a whole lot of great nicknames for players, like Oh to Be Young Again McDowell and Burt Be Home Blylevin. It was really fun to listen to those. Bono, lead singer of U2, will be 64 on May 10th. And Saturday Night Live veteran Kenan Thompson will be 46 on May 10th. Going to May 11th, Minnesota became the 32nd state on May 11th, 1858. A couple of Heisman Trophy winners celebrate birthdays on May 11th. Matt Leinart, who won the 2004 Heisman Trophy as the quarterback of Southern California. Matt Leinart will be 41. And Cam Newton, who won the 2010 Heisman Trophy playing for the Auburn Tigers, Cam Newton will be 35. Moving on to May 12th, that's a big one. Yogi Berra, born on May 12th, 1925, would have been 99 this year. Yogi Berra, the man of a thousand quotes, his kind of funny personality and aw shucks persona kind of hides the fact that he was really one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Won more World Series rings than anybody as a player, by the way. The late George Carlin, terrific commenter on society, comic, stand-up guy. George Carlin, born May 12, 1937. Lou Whitaker, the Detroit Tigers second baseman. He probably should be in the Hall of Fame and isn't yet. Lou Whitaker will be 67. Emilio Estevez will be 62. Tony Hawk, the skateboard great, will be 56 on May 12th. And last but most importantly, the most important person in my life, Tammy Hardgrove Shomo, will have a birthday on May 12th. Happy birthday, kid. On May 13th, the English colony at Jamestown, Virginia was established on May 13th, 1607. The United States declared war on Mexico on May 13th, 1846. Pope Paul II was seriously wounded, shot in an assassination attempt in Vatican City as he rode around the square there in his Popemobile on May 13, 1981. Obviously, he survived. He lived until 2004, I believe. Joe Louis, heavyweight boxing champ of the world and Army veteran, buried at Arlington National Cemetery, by the way. Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber, born May 13, 1914. Stevie Wonder, the music legend, will be 74 on May 13th. And another Stephen Colbert, host of The Late Show on CBS. Stephen Colbert will be 60 on May 13th. Lastly for this week, May 14th, 1948, Israel gained its independence. The United States was the first nation to officially recognize Israel as an independent country. Immediately, its neighbors went to war with it. Four times in the first 25 years of their existence, they were at war with some of their neighbors. Obviously, Israel versus Palestine, if you will, is a major hot topic today. That's a very troubling situation over there. And I'm not sure who's right myself, but hopefully cooler heads will prevail. That hasn't always happened in the Middle East, however. On May 14th, 1998, two showbiz notes. The late, great Frank Sinatra died on that day, May 14th, 1998. And the final ever episode of Seinfeld was aired on NBC on that night. Very controversial how he ended it. Seinfeld has talked about that a little bit lately. All right, some birthdays, lots of them. George Lucas, Star Wars, will be 80 on May 14th. Hall of Famer Tony Perez, one of the cogs of the Big Red Machine, the Cincinnati Reds of the 1970s. Tony Perez, clutch hitter, man, 82 years old. Dennis Martinez, El Presidente, threw a perfect game pitching for the Montreal Expos, helped the Cleveland Indians break their 41-year streak and win the American League pennant in 1995. Dennis Martinez will be 69. Actress Kate Blanchett will be 55. Akron native Dan Auerbach, one of the guys in the Black Keys, will be 45. Mark Zuckerberg, owner of half of everything online, seemingly, Zuck will be 40 on May 14th. And speaking of nicknames, Gronk, Gronkowski will be 35. And he's in like every other commercial now, I think, on TV for USAA and other things. Happy birthday, Gronk. Okay, there's our birthdays and events for this week. We'll continue with that next week, as we usually do. A couple of topics here. I don't know really where to start, so I'll start with this. I have some criticism of the judge in the Trump trial in New York. His judge's name is Mershon. Anyway, he has been repeatedly finding the defendant, the former president, guilty. 10 times, as a matter of fact, he's been found guilty of contempt of court. And he keeps issuing these statements saying, now, if you keep doing this, Mr. Trump, it's going to lead to me to have no other recourse but to put you in jail. How many times do you have to warn somebody before the warning is deemed, you know, inconsequential by the defendant? That doesn't work. Anybody who's parented or anybody who's been a teacher can probably tell you that you can't just keep threatening something without following through on it eventually. And I just, you know, I don't know that the judge will ever follow through on it here. If he's not intending to follow through on it, he shouldn't be holding it out there as a threat, because the threats become empty, as I said, after a while. I just, you know, I don't agree with his approach at all. If you're going to do it, do it. You don't have to throw him in Rikers Island. There's a holding cell just off the courthouse there. It's courtroom, I should say. Put him in there for a few hours. I don't think he'd like it too much. But you can't just keep threatening and not doing something. It's really ineffective. So there, I criticized a U.S. judge, you know, in New York. Okay, big deal. Next, the NBA playoffs. Easy for me to say. The champs are in big trouble. As we speak here last night, Minnesota opened up a can on Denver in the Mile High City, and the Timberwolves lead the Nuggets 2-0. Moving on to Minnesota for the next 2 games, and they look like they're ready to roll. The champs are in big trouble, I'd say. They have to get it together really fast. As for a couple of the other series, the sleeper team I see is Oklahoma City. Nobody's talking about Oklahoma City. They were the number one team in the regular season in the West. The only thing people are talking about is that dumb commercial that a couple of guys on the team made for AT&T. You know, what a pro wants, right? The other two series, the Knicks, they got some real home cooking last night in Game 1 from the officials against the Indiana Pacers. A couple of really questionable calls went their way late in a very close game. So they lead the Pacers 1-0. That could be a long series. When are some of these teams going to make Jalen Brunson pay a little bit physically for getting into the lane? That's what I'd like to know. He's a terrific player, don't get me wrong, and he has really dominated the playoffs so far. They have 3 guys from Villanova, by the way. The Knicks ought to really be donating money to Villanova University in Philadelphia for their contributions to the Knicks. But, you know, old school, I'm an old school basketball player, and if a guy keeps beating you, driving the lane and getting to the hoop, make him shoot some free throws now and then. Knock him around a little bit. You know, not maliciously, but let him feel it. I can't understand why teams just let him do that. Okay, lastly, the Celtics and Cavs, as I'm speaking, begin here in a few hours in Boston. The Cavs are a little bit bruised. So is Boston. Porzingis is out for the series, probably. But I expect the Celtics to win in five. That's my call. We'll know a little bit more next week when we do the next podcast, whether that still stands or not. But I got Boston in five, moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Okay. The last thing in the current event part of the podcast, if you will, is a really sad occurrence on Sunday down in Columbus. Somebody fell from the bell tower area of Ohio Stadium, if you're familiar with the horseshoe there, and died. It turns out that it's the mother of one of the graduates that day, which really makes it even sadder. They're not really saying very much down there about it. Leads me to believe that it's something, but I don't really want to speculate at this point yet either. I don't want to add to any rank speculation on that. Just a sad occurrence. And from personal experience down there, being at many football games, over a dozen football games at Ohio Stadium, I sat in that section, section 30 in the upper deck. Matt and I sat in that section in 2019 to watch the Buckeyes beat Wisconsin. That was the Chase Young game, by the way, folks. I can't see how you can jump from there down to where she landed outside the stadium. I don't understand it at all. The walls up there are higher, taller than you are, up at the back of that section and over by the bell tower. I can't figure that one out. It's really a terrible event in so many ways, but it's a real head scratcher for me. I really can't see how that could occur. But it did, and it's a terrible thing. Okay, moving on to three good questions, and thank you. You guys came through here. If you have a good question, I've got a couple in the funnel for next week. Email us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's three good questions, spelled out, threegood, questions@gmail.com. And we'll be happy to entertain any good questions. We have three this week, and a couple of these really can get me going. We'll get the easy one first, and it's from Ray Fries, one of my friends that I've played golf with several times. Where did Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer first compete with each other in golf? Where is the question? The answer is Athens, Ohio, of all places. In the late 1950s, they played along with one of the top pros at the time, Dow Finsterwald. Jack was still at Ohio State, I believe. Arnold Palmer was just really becoming the Arnold Palmer that we all know and love in terms of his success. But the three of them played around at Athens, Ohio in the late 1950s. Later on, Jack obviously turned pro in 1961 or two. As an amateur, he almost won the U.S. Open in 1960. That Arnold Palmer actually won out at Cherry Hills in New Jersey. But that's where it was. Thanks, Ray. Thanks a lot. Hope you're doing well. Second one is from Sister Lynn Downey. Thanks, sis. That's not her title, by the way. She is my sister. What were the highlights of, one, your baseball playing career, and two, your basketball playing career through high school? One of these is a lot easier to answer than the other one, so I'll answer that one first. My basketball playing career, up until varsity ball in high school, we were very successful. Very successful as a junior high team. We're co-champs of the City Series our sophomore year as JVs. And then junior year, we struggled. Senior year, we had a really good team and got beat four times at the buzzer. One of those games, though, was really kind of almost a personal highlight. We played, back in those days, there were Friday night doubleheaders in the City Series. And boy, a lot of people came out to watch those. They were held at Firestone, my alma mater, sometimes at North, sometimes at Garfield High School. This time we were playing at Garfield against East High. And we played those guys every year from seventh grade on. Teams knew each other really well. It was a terrific game. It was in overtime. There were about 10 seconds to go in overtime, and a foul was called. Foul was called on one of our guys, but one of East's players, Billy Gleespen, to drop a name, went berserk because he thought the referee called the foul on him, and he drew a technical foul. So the referees cleared the court. Mike Bell, the 6'8 center for East, went to the line first, made both shots, put them up by one. Guess who got to shoot the technicals for Firestone? That's right, yours truly. First one, swish. Second one bounced around about five times and went in. So with, 6 seconds to go, I had just made two free throws, standing there alone with about 1,500 people watching me to give us a one-point lead in overtime. That was pretty exhilarating. And that exhilaration lasted about 90 seconds. After the timeout, East inbounded the ball. One of our guys, who shall not be named, completely forgot who he was supposed to guard. This guy's wide open in the corner, buries a three at the buzzer. And it wasn't a three. It would have been a three this, in this era, but it was deep in the corner for two, buried it at the buzzer. We get beat by one. That was one of four or five games that year where we literally got beat at the buzzer. And I was so despondent about it. I hid in the shower area of the locker room while the newspaper people came in and talked to players and coaches. And so I didn't want to talk to anybody. But I was proud of myself for coming through in the clutch there. That was a real memorable occasion. I just wish my teammate would have remembered who he was guarding there. Anyway, that's the answer for basketball. For baseball, gosh, my high school baseball career, a lot of fond memories of that. Our coach was Dave Marshall, the man who the field is named after now at Firestone High School. He was probably as much of a mentor as any guy other than my own father to me. He was the kind of guy that you could sit down and have a meal with him and talk about just about any subject in the world. And he knew what he was talking about, and it was a very interesting and lively conversation. He was just that kind of a guy, and he was a really good coach too. So my real memory is that senior year that we had. We had seven seniors on the team, great group of guys. Keith Dambrot was a junior playing second base mostly, third base mostly. Actually, he kicked me off of third base and I played center field. But we had a great team, wound up losing the city championship game 3-1 to Garfield. There's that Garfield High School again. We hit nine line drive outs and lost 3-1. And that just still stings. But what a great team. It was a great group of guys to play with, and that's kind of my great memory, nothing individual, really, about my high school baseball experience. So thanks, Sis, for the question. That's a really good one. Made me think a lot. Okay, third good question for this week comes from Roman at THS. Do you believe Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame? Now, that's a hot-button issue for this Pirates fan. I saw Barry Bonds play several times in person at Three Rivers Stadium when he was young, fast, thin, 25 home runs and 50 stolen bases, Barry Bonds. Could really field, a gold glove fielder in left field, stole bases like crazy, like I said. That guy went to San Francisco as a free agent and eventually ballooned into a almost comic book character. Hit 73 home runs in 2001. As we know, he was very deeply involved in the Balco scandal with, steroids and so forth. And he has not yet been on the ballot to be in the Hall of Fame. He has been on the ballot, but he has not been chosen to be on the Hall of Fame, in spite of the fact that he hit more home runs than anybody in Major League history. I have a tough time with that. On the one hand, they are letting the voters vote, and the voters have chosen not to include him in the Hall of Fame, and that's their prerogative, and I'm fine with that. Boy, on the other hand, it's just sad, really. Had he not done that, he would have probably been the kind of guy who had 300 or 400 home runs and 1,000 stolen, 800, 1,000 stolen bases. Such a unique player, and I really don't know what made him do it, but he is what he is. He's made his bed. He has to lie in it. I am fine with him not being in. I'll put it that way. If he gets in, I'm not going to hang black paper mache around the house and mourn. He was a great player. But I'm fine with him not being in the Hall of Fame. Roman, I hope that makes sense. I don't know if it does. But that's where I'm at. Having actually seen the guy play in his younger years, such an exciting player. To turn in what to what he turned into is just kind of mind-boggling, really. Okay, those are three really good questions. There are a couple in the queue here that I'll save for next week. If you've got a good question, again, email us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That ought to do it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. It's great to hear from people who are enjoying the podcast. It's really quite taken me by surprise how many people have said, "Hey, yeah, I love listening to your podcast." Gee, that's nice. I'm just doing it for a hobby, but I'm glad folks are enjoying it, and we're going to keep it going. So thanks for tuning in once again. Thanks for picking us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next week on Then and Now. Have a good one.